October 31, 2018. Happy Halloween! It's the Watt from Pedro Show.
Thank you. חדשות מסעירות. העולם מסתיים עוד חמש
שנים. Damas y caballeros, tenemos una importante noticia de última hora. El mundo se acabará en 5 años.
We interrupt this broadcast with terrible news. We have just learned that the world will end in 5 years.
Watch for Pedro Show. Happy Halloween, people. We're S. Dave Acht. It's the ninth show. I don't think I've ever done this many Watch for Pedro shows in a month. In the almost, over 17 and a half. Coming up on 18 in May. Years of doing this. Brother Matt, hopefully I'm going to see him Sunday. And we'll rejoin as the tag team with Aiden and Abetton. He does so well with me. I'm not a man alone. Totally my pad here at Pedro, because due to the engineering wonders of those programmers in Estonia for coming up with the Skype software, I got John Elderkin. Are you in Chapel Hill?
I'm in Durham, actually. I was in Chapel Hill.
Okay, John, welcome aboard, brother.
Thank you. I'm really glad to be here.
Man, you made a righteous piece of work, and now, people aware of some of my later stuff, I ended up doing three of these operas, and it's kind of on the same trip John is, where it's one big song made out of little ones. We started with the Thelonious Monk with John Coltrane doing Ruby, My Dear, but you know, those 9 months in between the two stints and John Coltrane's, Miles Davis's quintet. He did 9 months, and that's also when he kicked the shit, like the year I was born, so it was an important time. And then the first part of Moonbeams No Mas.
Yeah.
News Came Over is the first part. But we're going to get to that piece, you know, which is, you did in the last year or two, right? It's pretty recent. But what is your earliest musical memory, John?
You know, my earliest memory is of my mother in the afternoons with a transistor radio, listening to the AM radio and kind of going around the house doing chores and things and kind of following her around and soaking that up in the mid-70s. Okay. And we were not a musical family. There was not music in the house otherwise, and I think that's why that transistor radio just...
I mean, you know, she was a listener, but you're saying there's no players.
There were no players, and my mom was, to be honest, she was a very casual listener. She, it wasn't like she would say, hey, did you happen to hear the new Neil Diamond song, or, you know...
Oh, yeah, okay. You mean like she didn't really have record collections, she's just listening to whatever's coming over the radio.
Exactly.
Ah, interesting.
Yeah, so it was, you know, it was a real beacon for me, and really, I was so attuned to it, I think my parents kind of picked up on, well, hey, he might be interested in music and art.
what gave him that indicator, John?
You know, I think I walked around the house singing those songs all the time, and I would make lists. I also didn't know the song.
First instrument was your voice then?
Early on, I mean, yeah. Yeah, until I found an electric guitar.
Yeah, right. But you started off with the birthed instrument. What about at school? Did they have music classes in your school? Like choir or school band or shit like that?
They did. You know, when I was in, say, third grade, I tried the clarinet, and it just didn't go anywhere. And
Parallel Universe came with me, seventh grade. Mr. Luna, the music teacher, said, Mr. Watt, you try hard, but
yeah,
I tried for 10 weeks.
You know, it's funny how direct they were. Maybe they still are, but I had the same thing. The music director basically said, you're not cut out for this.
Shit. Was it in front of the class?
No, although, you know, I have memories of feeling a little bit ashamed in front of the class, so he might have said something.
Okay, yeah. Mr. Luna here at Dotson Junior High in Pedro. I just got here, you know, from Virginia, and he goes, you know, Mr. White, you try hard. I told you that part, but I'll tell you the other part. He said, I don't think you should be wasting your time or my time. And then he looks at the class, and I goes, our time. So I never took another music class. I learned from D. Boone and Creedence Records. But you know, who knows? Funny. You know, like any farmer would tell you, get a good crop from, you know, manure. So
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So the third grade clarinet experience wasn't so good. What about first record you bought yourself?
You know, the first record I bought was Glenn Campbell's Greatest Hits.
Right.
And I, you know, so I was raised on this AM pop music, and I didn't know that there was hard rock. I didn't know it existed. I didn't know about jazz. I was kind of living in a bubble, and I really soaked up that, like, for me, the primitive thing is the pop hook, you know.
Oh, and, sure. Right, because AM radio was big, but actually, late 60s, early 70s, there was stuff like, there was an edited version of Smoke on the Water from Live Deep Purple on AM radio. Yeah, you can believe that shit. American Woman from the Guess Who.
Yep,
which
right.
Which is kind of a hard rock thing, right? But you're right, as FM radio came in, it divided up.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I must have missed. Yeah, I think that's right. And I knew the Carpenters and John Denver and like all those CB radio songs, you know, singing about your truck and all of that. And I knew that stuff inside out. But they would also sprinkle in Stevie Wonder or Sly or, you know, there was cool stuff.
Oh, yeah. Stevie Wonder had those three big albums. Actually, he's playing everything on them, Pertner, you know. I want to play here the next three parts of your opus.
Okay.
Is that cool? Okay.
Yeah.
We waited 5 years for the world to go bust, to explode into space and scatter as dust. I tried to hold on, wasn't sure who to trust. I didn't know about love yet. I didn't know about love yet. We waited 5 years, what a grueling routine. The assholes acted nice, the sweethearts got mean. Moms shoot us outside, said run, play while you can. The old man grabbed our neck, dump shovels in our hands, said we're perfectly safe, we'll dig halfway to Japan. Oh man, I didn't know about love yet. I didn't know about love yet. I ran away straight to the record store. I charged in singing that song about hate and war. When who were you? All alone by the used vinyl bin.
I was trying to choose between Molly Hatchet and Ringo Starr when you stumbled in.
Stumbled in? You wore an eye patch. What could you see?
Even with lazy eyes, I could tell you were 3 inches shorter than me.
Record stores, record stock, just as I said out loud. World, please, don't end now. Don't end now. We waited 5 years for the world to shut off, to go still and dark with a whimper and cough. We waited 5 years and a day. My sis marked the calendar, said no freaking way. And 5 years and a week, Mom opened our hatch. 5 years became 6 and 7. The old man paced the yard, grumbling, same hell, same heaven.
I grew at least a foot hanging by the used vinyl bin, waiting for a certain someone to walk back in. I didn't know about love yet. I didn't know about love yet. I didn't know about love yet.
Thank you. What was that?
I think I know.
So, let's get serious now. Was Poe afraid?
This is a serious poem. I didn't mean it to be comical. On these same brick streets of Baltimore tonight, was Poe afraid? Afraid of the fluorescent eyes of dogs, the raven's reflection, the rat's scat through sawdust in Holland's market, the smell of rot and burlap thick as fur, afraid of roaches, disease, of poverty, loud poverty, boom box, crackle crack, whip, poor ponies, pulling carts full of greens up Green Street, overloaded with greed. Afraid of the thick sky over foggy tavern doors on Cross Street, cloud-draped rummage, crimson cloak, threading from the hill down to the curling dark water bay. Afraid of the statues with iron pope, poet capes, flowing in formal rapture and cast hollow spirits, looking down cold upon those animated who walking and talking past old doorways. Afraid of the wine, the drugs, the vault, of alcoholic shorelines, fractal ragged fault. Floating in a dream grave, afraid to yell, smug disciples repeating versions of hell. The whirl of a wash, a tangled thread, sets an alarm that turns to dread, makes the vision flow instead into creation and how such a grace is fed. Life is a poor host, grabbing guests who came, swirling great pleated sheets, wrapping the stars, leaving streaming party coils to their last cars. Some on twilight's slightly twisted cane. Yeah.
Four, three, two, one.
Thank you.
Watch for Pedro show. Yeah, the next three parts, 2, 3, and 4. We waited 5 years. Messy down below, and the message. And after that, we had Charlie Plymell reading a poem with Poe Afraid. Pussy Riot with Pong. A little boy with the ray gun from Phil Spector's Oklahoma City. Bullets or Balloons. Jerk It. Spokanistan. Shubsky. Croatia, Tajno Zanadje, sorry, King Champion Sounds of the Netherlands with Big Red Button, Maya and the Revolutionary, hell yeah, with live version, Open Minds, from Up City, and Still House Plants out of Glasgow with Obie Lowe's, / Lowe's, and back to John Elkins' musical journey. So, what was the first gig you saw, John?
I think the first gig I remember was an outdoor show in Charlotte. I grew up in Charlotte and in North Carolina, and
a little west of where you are now.
Pardon?
A little west of where you are now. I think the first pad I played there was called Pterodactyl Club.
Yeah.
And get this, Charlotte's also notorious for me because it's the last time I played with D Boone. It was opening for REM, and they brought us on for the encore, and they actually gave me one of Pete Buck's guitars. I can't play it very well, two tiny fucking strings, but we did See No Evil, if you know that television song. And Georgie played the four tom. And, the REM guys were out there, and that's the last time I played with them was in your town. I think it was, I can't remember the date. My mind blocks it out, but it was like in the first 2 weeks of December, 85.
So my brother and I were at that show.
Oh, shit. Okay, John. Then we're co-conspirators going way back.
Yeah, man.
Oh, wow.
Were you wearing like a Chairman Mao kind of a hat?
I had big bushy hair, but I was wearing, D-Boone wanted me to look like Hefe, and so he had me wearing army clothes and not shave. And he also said, look, you got to try this no meat thing. So all I ate for 3-4 months was broccoli, and my skin was kind of turning green. Yeah. And then, that was the weirdest kind of thing. And then he said he was going to dress like Bruce Springsteen, but I didn't really see that.
Yeah, I don't remember that. Now, as I recall that gig, REM got up and did an a cappella version of Moon River, and then you guys came up.
Yeah, they brought
that.
Us on. Yeah, yeah. We didn't bum rush it. We were invited.
I didn't mean that. But,
Vincent Gallo, speaking of that song, man, I saw Petra Hayden and Vincent Gallo do a duet of that song up in Hollywood. Wow, blew me away. That's a great lyric. Mm. Raymond Pettibone, one of his favorite lyrics. So you were at that gig. How old were you?
I would have been about 18.
Okay. Because I was about a week away from 28. I was 27 at the time. Okay. So what was the first gig? Let's get back. I'm sorry to change that on you.
I
don't usually get to share shit like that with people, though, John. Like, the last gig I played with D-Boone, I don't have a lot of people I can share that with.
Yeah, no, I understand. And actually, I talked to my brother the other day, and he had mentioned it, and I hadn't realized. I knew that it was your last gig, and then I didn't, it's been a long time, and he reminded me of that. So I was aware of that.
And so whenever I hear See No Evil, it's kind of special.
Yeah.
I could do that.
So Peter Buck gave you a guitar?
Well, to play for the song, not to take
off. Oh, he did.
And I couldn't use a pick. I'm there with my fingers. But I knew the lick. Me and D-Boone, Marky Moon, and Richard Hell, Voidoid, mm-hmm. Blank Generation, those, wow, they big influence on us. Well, a lot of records.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff. So what was the first gig? It wasn't that one, was it? No.
So I couldn't get into clubs. So I would wait for weekend shows where bands would play outside at, on the square at Queens College or wherever. And there was a British Invasion band called the Spongetones. And is the first kind of cool rock show I remember.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, so... Like, no, not really a music thing in school, but what about after school with your buddies, like the bedroom, basement, garage thing? Okay. Because you mentioned something about guitar. How did you get turned on to the guitar?
Well, I discovered rock and roll, like real rock and roll. We had like some hippies living next door, and I think they realized this poor kid is obsessed with music and he doesn't know anything about it. So... they invited me over, and, it's like the classic story. Years after the Beatles broke up, but they played me a Beatles record, and I was like, whatever this is, I want more. And I kind of went from there. And I'll be honest, when I was at that gig, that was the first time I saw REM that night. And I went out and got a Rickenbacker guitar with my paper delivery money, and I wanted to play like Peter Buck all
so,
the time.
Okay, so we can blame Peter Buck. Okay, he's a good guy.
Yeah.
He's a good guy to blame. All right, that's pitching. So you bought it with your own money, so it wasn't, because sometimes I get the story, my parents bought me this thing, but they said, if I'm going to get you this, you got to take lessons. But it sounds like you were way motivated anyway.
I was motivated, and I was with a group of friends that would become my first band. Our parents were not actually all that interested in it, and I think they thought, you know, as long as it keeps him from driving us crazy, that's fine by me. So we kind of invented our own way of being in a band. I didn't know what musical harmony was. I didn't know how to tune a guitar. I didn't know anything.
Yeah.
And we just kind of invented our way of doing it.
And what was this? Did this band have a name?
Our high school band was called the Fifth Column.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Oh, yeah. And
Infiltrators.
Parents would leave town for the weekend, and we would get called in, and we would play in somebody's living room, and, you know, that whole thing.
House party.
Yeah.
Or we called them keggers because you do them in the backyard with the pony keg, and, yeah. The grass grew really tall and bright green from all the pissing. Okay. Can you remember your first Fifth Column gig?
I do. I sure do.
What was it like?
We couldn't find anywhere to play, and we ended up in a city park that had a cement floor with a canopy over it, and they said we could play from 6 to 8 one Saturday, and
whoa,
so we
long set.
We brought all our equipment, and again, like, we didn't know anything. Our drummer set up on the cement floor, and of course the drums started sliding all over the place. So, you know, it was that kind of thing. But I'll never forget. So part of my musical story is I spent most of my life on and off playing with two friends, Steve Rubenthal, who I co-wrote a lot of songs with, and Jim Rumley, our drummer. And Steve was the kind of guy who was hoping that everything would always be perfect. And I always was like, I don't care if it's perfect. I just want to make a lot of noise. And right before we got up to play our first song ever, he says, I really hope we can get this song perfect. And I said, Steve, there's no chance at all. And he just kind of smirked and he goes, I wish that didn't make you so happy. And then, boom, we were off.
Okay. That's vicious. How long does band last? Well, what, you're saying somebody, the drummer man you're still playing with?
Well, so the drummer and Steve played everything but bass and guitar, depending upon the band. We were in various bands together for a long time. Steve died a few years ago, and then Jim died a year after him. So it was a long on and off thing, but they've been gone for 4 or 5 years.
Okay. So. But from the Fifth Column, did the Fifth Column ever graduate to recording or touring?
No, we had videos. There are videos of us, I think we would just put up a cassette recorder in front of us and record into a cassette tape. But that we were playing a lot of covers, and we didn't. We didn't imagine ourselves as something bigger than that, so it wasn't until I got to college that we started.
Yeah, when you get to college, you start playing with guys that want to record, that want to tour?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Tell me about that.
Yeah. So Steve and I both went to Chapel Hill, the University of North Carolina, and I was really against going to college because I was like, my job, I want to be in a rock band. What are we doing going to college? And again, Steve was like, what are you, nuts?
He's the pragmatic guy.
In some ways he was.
But you know what? Chapel Hill is good music town.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I got to work at Cat's Cradle, and I was deep in all of that. It was the best.
Brother Frankie.
Love Frankie.
Yeah. Absolutely. I played all four Cat's Cradles.
Oh, really? Really?
Yeah. I wouldn't shit you.
Yeah. He's I love that guy. Yeah. He's really, yeah, important in my life too. So we came to town and started a band called The Popes, and we again were just kind of making things up as we went, and we were, you know, we were sort of a, I know the term like pop punk or punk pop doesn't, like, I don't know what it even means, but in my mind we were sort of, yeah, but that's I mean, I had that pop.
No, I'm just joking, because they borrowed a lot from the Buzzcocks. I mean, there's even the Ramones. Notice there's no, that's too bluesy. You know? Yeah, I think the Ramones had a lot of pop. Yeah, I don't think, you know, labels to me are kind of useless anyway. Music's music.
No, I agree. I was just trying to, yeah, I'm with you.
No, I know that it was a big deal. It still is. Some people, if they don't have a name for it, they don't know how to deal with it. I know, it's weird about that, but that's humans.
I'm with you. I mean, when people ask me, I actually have tried to get away from the musical description and talk about what we were, which is sort of, we were, I feel like our ethos was like, we were frustrated, skeptical young men, but we kept our chins up, you know? Like, to me, that was the Popes.
That's kind of like Minuteman.
Yeah, you guys, I mean, you guys were just such killer musicians on top of that.
Although we practiced Blue Oyster Cult before, you know. Yeah. Because I'm a few years before you, so there was this culture of copying off records. That ended up kind of good training. I don't know how good it was as being original. We're lucky that the movement came, because we didn't know one person who wrote their own fucking songs. At least you didn't say you didn't know what you're doing, but and you said you played some covers, but you wrote songs, right?
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
You know?
So when you guys were learning covers, like, did you want to get them to sound like the record, or
no,
did you use those?
Yeah. Maybe. Okay, here's what the analogy I give, John. Like building models, you know, race car, dragster. Hey, it kind of looks like the real thing. Actually, they look more like the Ratfink ones with the giant eyeballs and the tongue hanging out. But that's what it was. There was no way you could really learn because our ears weren't good enough. But it did, you know, there was no culture to write, to use music as expression for us here at Pedro in the early 70s. We had to wait for the movement. Look, we're at the end of the first hour, Halloween 2018, with John Elderkin, special guest. Hold tight for hour two. October 31, 2018, happy Halloween. It's hour two of What from Pedro Show.
Where do you hide? What secret sun lights your half of the sky? Where it glows, it glows, it glows. George Clinton battled with Sir No. The carpenters welcome. What explains what rock stars know? Dum dum dum. Are your ears to the tracks? Palms toward the
I know just the look the spotlight wants. When can I get off? Play to your strengths. Gather your strength. Gather your strength.
Thank you. sharp, clear sentences, a little problem with reality. Know your enemy, the destroyer. Communication is grateful. The pains are imaginary. The time shortage is real. Oh, very distant ship, I have counted your rivets and blessed on every sail. It is like echoes now, all that I can hear. Conversation is slowly dying as she holds up the phone. Persuasion for simple task. Expert teams on the chores. Each brush with reality temporarily delays the inevitable. And then back into the dreamland. Sunshine counts the hours. Days go dingling by. I am waiting for a chance to take over once again to talk. A bit of love so briefly. Memories debris in a storm. Rescued from the curb. It splits your imagination. To be on the dying side, let us turn on the TV. Oops, it is too late for that. How many more times will I touch base with her?
Thank you.
Watt from Peter. So start off the second hour with
the next three parts of John's piece, Song for David Bowie, Gather Your Strength, and Don't Look Right at the Sun. Then we heard Joe Brewer out of Madison with In and Out, and Mike Ragnetta, Brooklyn. You can't choose your family. Yeah, that's true. That's a true test. Okay. So, the Popes.
Yeah.
What becomes of them?
We had a really good run. We played a lot in the South, you know, toured around in the South. Occasionally we'd get up to New York. We got a record deal, and the record deal freaked us out, and we imploded.
Okay. So kind of a sad story. Sad ending.
I'm laughing now. I mean, it's pretty typical, it seems to me. I don't know. You know, when we started out, we did everything by ourselves, including, you know, paying to put our record out and stick it in mailers and all the rest of it. And then you reach this point where you're like, wow, if we don't get some help, we won't move forward. And I think we had this idea that a record deal would be what would help us. And looking back, you know, I'm like, eh, maybe not.
Yeah, but, you know, that's why, what did Flipper say? Life is the only thing worth living for. So you maybe some stuff like that you got to learn. You got to walk through it.
Yeah.
I think Mr. Bukowski said, what matters most is how you walk through the fire. Can we get into this piece here? Because I'm going to play the next three parts. What brought it? I looked at the trailer thing, and I guess you were doing a gig, and fire came out of the amp.
That's the story I'm telling. I think like you, maybe I got to a point where I wanted to tell a bigger story, and I actually gave up music for about 9 years, and I didn't touch a guitar, and I wrote a memoir, and I just started thinking about storytelling, and just wanted to tell a great big story, and you know, I was thinking about the Popes and my friends Steve and Jim, and sort of the price of going all in, and I was like, how can I make this really fun and freaky? And I came up with the idea of why not pick up where I think David Bowie left off with Ziggy Stardust. And, you know, that's a tricky one, because if you listen to that record, it's not really clear what's going on in that. But
well, the title says The Rise and the Fall. So, in a way, it's kind of, there's no room for part two, right? Unless the Phoenix, except the Phoenix kind of idea where you do come from the fall. And that's the feeling I got from your piece. It was almost the phoenix, the bird coming out of the fire.
Yes.
The wreckage.
Yeah. Well, and in my mind, the story. So, you know, Bowie says at the beginning of that record, in 5 years, the world is going to end.
Right.
And so my record picks up. I'm like a kid in the 70s, and I believe everything I hear from rock stars. And in this world, everyone does. So we wait 5 years and the world doesn't end. It's like, well, now what? So I start a band. And then that band gets its cosmic message. And, you know, like I tried to make it like all bands. Every band thinks they've got that special thing. And they do. They have that special thing that they want to share with the world. I just made mine a message from the cosmos. And
a band is a trippy kind of thing, because it's kind of an idealized way of getting humans together. Almost like the perfect political state or something.
Mm-hmm.
Of course
mm-hmm.
it's not, but I'm just saying. Okay, so you started out. So first you got your narrative going in your head. And then you're thinking, okay, I got to flesh this out. Oh, fuck. You there, John? We lost internet for a little bit there. Sorry.
Yeah.
Big winds. Here we call them Santa Anas. They come out of the desert sometimes. Sometimes they help big fucking fires, but it has nothing to do with it. But I lost you there for a second. So let's pick back up where you were. You were talking about kind of a little influence from David Bowie's "The Rise and Fall of Ziggy Stardust." You're kind of taking it off where it leaves off. the idea where the band is kind of blessed with a certain knowledge.
Right. So we're a dive bar band. We're not going anywhere, but we think, you know, we think we have this message. And yeah, so there's a song on the record that's kind of, it almost is like a Native American chant. There's a lot going on with that, but it's meant to be this cosmic moment where our gig is interrupted. My amp catches on fire, like, you know, Moses in the bush. And we get this cosmic message and off we go thinking that, you know, the world is going to listen to us and we have something important to say.
Okay, let's listen to the next three parts.
The whole world is always sleeping in. Ha, 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 ha. They say keep it down, down. I can keep it down. In the still morning hush, I hear trouble. Want me to keep it down, down. Watch me keep it down. Okay, a year.
time means nothing in the van. Right, let's get back in the van. Why don't we sing? Let's all join in as one. La 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 la, la la. We will be heard. Spring will thaw our toes. We'll laugh, we almost quit the plan. Please, let's get back in the van. You got sick and we didn't know why. You got sick and we didn't know why. The sky was shining.
The sky was shining.
Our words were rhyming,
our words were rhyming.
You got sick and we don't know how long. You got sick and we don't know how long.
watched you laugh. I turned my head, I didn't cry. I saw you smile. I watched you laugh. I turned my head up to the sky. Thank you.
Watford Beaver Show. In the next three parts, John Elkins, a big opus. Keep it down. Get back in the van. And you got sick. Then we heard Dustin Wong, brand new Village Made of the Zephyr. Litany from Tashiwada, Yoshiwada in France. And finally, Amy Apps with Hooverville. So, I'm interested. Just like, okay, now it's time to like realize and, oh shit. John, we had a little trouble again. So did you pick up on what I was, we're back though. Did you pick up on what I was saying there? Like, you got this idea of the framework of the, you know, the big narrative, the big story. And when it came to like actualizing the different parts, did they come in order? Or now I'll try the, you know, the third from the last part, or now I'll try the middle part, or now, what am I going to start with? Oh, fuck! Okay, did you get my question about how you put this together? Because I don't know what it fucking cut out, so I don't know how much you heard. Well, I was saying, I mean, you got the story together in your mind, and as you were fleshing it out and realizing it, how did you get all the part? Did you do it sequentially? Like, if this needs this here, this. I'm just interested in the process.
Yeah, no, I like the talk process. So I had the general idea of how what the beginning, middle, and end would be, which is they get the cosmic message, they go out on the road and fail, and then there's. I wanted to get kind of silly in sci-fi, so in the last act, I build a homemade rocket in the backyard with my sax player, and we fly to the moon with a megaphone, and then shout down to the people of Earth.
Right. You don't want to give too much away because we ain't played those parts yet. So okay, but I'm wondering the process. Like, yeah, now this has got to happen. I've got to make this clear to the listeners. So I'm going to use this and that, and like. Basically, it's like tricky. A solar system, right? Because the planets are all part of the same system, right? And like the planets are like pieces of the piece, the big piece.
Yeah, I'm with you. And then deciding, you know, which stars need to shine when. I didn't actually know the order of most of the songs, and I was living alone in this cabin in the woods for a long time, just me and my dog, and I was obsessed with this project, and I would put song titles on pieces of paper and paste them on the wall, you know, and I would move them around and think about where ideas needed to fit. And it really only came together right at the end.
So you were, even though you had the big concept mind, like in the acute, real close, you were making little tunes. The parts were actually like tunes of themselves.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I didn't know how else to do it, to be honest.
I was inspired. Have you ever heard this Who record called Happy Jack?
Oh, yeah.
There's a song on there called A Quick One, While He's Away.
I'm obsessed with that song.
That's what I used for my three operas. Like, what?
Really?
What if it, you know, what you want to say ain't big, the format ain't big enough. And so, like what Pete Townsend did there, they went through this little journey. There's bayou, there's beach, there's mountains, there's pasture, you know, forest, whatever.
Do you know anything about how he put that
together? I have absolutely no idea, but you do hear parts of it in later works of his. I have no idea, but for some reason that resonated with me way more than Tommy.
Yeah, me too. Well, and Quadrophenia more than Tommy.
Absolutely. Yeah. I don't know why. And same with D Boone. Isn't that a trip? Hey, we at the end of the even Sellout. Second hour.
Yeah.
Halloween 2018. Dish Wap Peter Show. A special guest, John Elderkin. Hold tight for hour three. October 31, Halloween 2018. It's the third hour. The Wap Peter Show.
I count the miles and months gone.
The moon between us. Can we see at the same time? When I sing, you're with me. I know you tried hard as me.
Hey, man, I saw your cousin
can't shut yourself away. I won't let you. I tell you what, my mom sent me a big orange birthday cake. That thing is profound. I mean, there could be girls inside that thing. Come here, man. I'm gonna toss you right in the middle and let you eat your way out.
That's the bottle.
I'm going to go to the hospital. getting out. A girl is 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 getting out.
Starting the third hour off with the next week. Parts of John Ellicott's Moonbeams No Mas. By the way, that's Espanol for like, no more moonbeams. Okay. Maybe. That's the idea. Anyway, it was Danielle Long Gone, Fat Levon on Acid, and Megaphone on the Moon, which is, you kind of like gave away that little part on the end of the second hour, but that's okay. Mold Omen after that with Levitation out of Baltimore, and the Doers from, what's that town? The big one on the west side. Vancouver. Actually, there's one in Washington State, too. So if you're not forgetting which border you're crossing, yeah, you get fucked up that way. Well, United and Wrong. So we're back talking about his piece. And what's really interesting, you're talking off air, listeners. John, the piece didn't end for John when he got done writing and recording this thing. He actually sees a future for it in... like adding on other perspectives of artistic expression, like maybe musical, maybe animation. Explain, John.
Yeah, I just, when I finished it, I thought, you know, as we were saying earlier, I was thinking about rock operas, I was thinking about Quadrophenia, things like that. And then it sort of dawned on me way after the fact that what I've written is the soundtrack for a performance piece, so either something to be acted out or animated by a cartoonist or something like that.
Right.
And now that I see that, it seems plain as day. Okay. I didn't see that earlier.
No, at first, yeah, it started out you and your dog in your cabin and pieces of paper getting put in different sequences. That's so interesting.
Yeah.
Did you make little demos? Let's get into the making of it. What studio did you use?
I was at a place called Old House Studio in Charlotte. He's become sort of a writing partner. Chris Gargis runs Old House Studio, and he was incredibly sympathetic. And he was one of the few people who didn't just kind of roll his eyes and say, "You're gonna do what?" He was really into it. And so I would make. I don't like to make demos that are all involved. I like to just put on a recorder and play the song and move on. And he's got a vision. You know, he can hear what I'm up to and then start to really help me flesh it out. So I have to give him a lot of credit. And that's how we worked. Is I would send in maybe a three or four track demo tops, mm-hmm. done quickly, and then he would sort of know where we should go. It was great.
And then the other musicians?
Yeah. So one of the things I wanted to do, I had been away from music for a while, and I wanted to bring together as many of my old friends and people who had been in the scene back in the day. I wanted it to be a community.
Yeah,
so there
yeah.
must be 20 or 30 people playing
right,
on this
right.
record. Yeah.
Was there a lot of decide involved with that? Well, you wanted to fit everybody in, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, no, there. You know, it's funny. There were a few people I really wish had not thought I was a crackpot. and then there were some people that, you know, you couldn't make it work or that you had moved out of town or whatever. But most of my musician friends were game. And, you know, especially once I explained to them, this is not an homage to David Bowie. It has almost nothing to do with David Bowie. I'm just using his story to jump off and tell my own story. And I feel like that's what music and art do, right? Like, is you hear something you love and you're like, well, I want to respond to it.
I can relate, John. My third opera, Hyphenated Man, I borrowed heavily mm-hmm. from Hieronymus Bosch. But I don't know 500-600-year-old Dutch. So I just made up my own ideas of what those little amalgam of creature things were. So I could use it. Oh, fuck. Lost it. People, these Halloween gremlins keep trying to ruin our show, but we're not going to let it happen because we're going to have John explain his piece. And no Halloween gremlins are going to stop it. But anyway, I know what you mean. That's what it's for, a metaphor. You know, it's to relate using something. Or like a cup, right? To drink the bourbon from. It doesn't matter which basketball team is written on the cup. It's more, you know, if it's brown, it's going down. That's the way I look
at it.
Maybe not the best way to put it, but that's the way I look at it. So you had to convince your cast of characters, hey, trust me.
Yeah. I mean, some people were really delighted by how crazy it sounded at first, and they jumped right on it. And some people the funny thing is, in the middle of writing it, David Bowie died, and I did not anticipate that that was. Some people would see this as maybe a little bit cynical, and I just never even, it didn't dawn on me. Do you know, Don Dixon used to work with REM?
Sure.
So Don was on the record, and he was a big help when I was trying to get it out in the world. And he was the one who said, you realize that the, calling it a David Bowie, Ziggy Stardust sequel could turn people off, and it hadn't even dawned on me that would be the case.
Because you know why? In a way, John, it was a coincidence, wasn't it?
Totally. Yeah, I had already started the project.
Right.
I was deep in it. Yeah.
He had done Spiders from Mars in 1972 or something.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I had had this fantasy that I would finish it and somehow get a copy to him just to, I just thought, well, that would be cool. But other than that, that was really the, you know, and I put Song for David Bowie on there because, you know, I was trying to follow Dylan's Song to Woody, and then Bowie did Song to Dylan, and I wanted to do Song to Bowie to be part of that through line.
He also did one for Andy Warhol, That Wasn't Too Kind.
Yeah, that's right.
Have you ever read about that? Like, I think David Bowie went to Andy Warhol went to a thing where David Bowie played at this before he's big. It's some acoustic, the Hunky Dory days. And he did not like it.
No, I didn't know anything about that.
Actually. Yeah, that just last year. Well, you know, so many stories came out after he passed away, you know. I want to play the last four parts here, okay?
Okay.
This is the final act, people, so listen.
I am sore afraid of what comes next, of losing you. Keeping you, I'm a shepherd in the field. I work nights, silent nights, gigantic nights. Thank you.
Untie the rope, Levon.
Right on.
Snuff out that cigarette. Tie those cinder blocks to your shoes tight. We'll set up on that ridge right there, where the dark side meets the light.
Boy, let's go. Okay, Levon, drop it right there.
Roger that. Alright, John. We're on in 3, 2, 1.
Friends, can everyone hear? Friends, look up. Look way up here. Blue ocean
fills our eyes. Our bloody canteens ran dry. These jetpacks on our backs, they won't get us home. Friends, we carry rough news, and friends, you'll have to shoulder it too. I wrote a rally cry and promised not to cry, but friends, holy cow, up here you can't believe the size of the sky.
John, we're talking off air about Hyphenated Man and stuff and things that parallel his piece. But this is John's the guest, not Watt, so people. The last four pieces were Sore Afraid. That's Sore, S-O-R-E. Telstar, which was a great instrumental a long time ago, I remember, too. It was a satellite. Communications satellite, I remember. Yeah. Because, you know, I was growing up in the 60s, the space race was big. A Trip to the Moon, and finally, Give Me Your Hands. To me, it's just a righteous piece, man. It was very, very uplifting for me. What about touring? Do you ever have ideas of, because you're talking about performance, but what about, like, like a band playing it? That kind of performance.
I would love to do that. You want to join me? it's tricky because it is such a big piece, and to take I don't know how many musicians it would take, and I struggle with how to do it, and I have not. I did a few sort of album listening shows with visuals, but I have not taken a band out to do that, and I'm up for it. I don't feel like this is going to age, you know. I think I can do it whenever I can do it.
They are tough, I will tell you, because, you know, we don't stand in front of music stands and shit. When I was doing the third opera, all of them, the first shows were like nightmares trying to remember all that shit. I had 30 parts, and each part had four or five parts. So Tom Rowell and myself had to, the Japanese people got the first tour. Oh, my God.
How did you feel about, I mean, you felt like you pulled it off, right?
No, I just thought, you know what? If you got the huevos, just keep charging, but don't be too full of yourself. And kind of like a skateboard thing, right? You can't talk your way out of it. You got to get back on the skateboard. But they were, I had incredible shamings. But I don't know what, another way to do it, you know?
Yeah.
Those people sitting there with music in front of them, that's a lot different than you up there with two other guys just trying to wing this whole fucking thing. But right. You know what? By the fifth tour, we got it. So that's proof
yeah.
that practice is perfect. Look, John, what would you tell somebody who wanted advice? Because your journey through music is really interesting. The way you put it away, it kind of reminds me of James Williamson, who didn't play for 30 years and then came back. What would your advice be?
Just
A young person wants to get into music, and what could you tell them by doing it for all these years?
I guess I would say it's okay to trust your instincts and let other people trust their instincts, and that's like the hardest thing in the world for me anyhow. It was always like that's a lesson I really had to learn, but I never got too hung up on whether I was the best musician or singer or anything like that. I just I kind of went with my gut, and I don't know if that is that too simple. I don't
no,
know.
No, I think it's great. I think it's fucking fundamental. I think that's what you build all the other shit on. You know, in my opinion, I think it's great advice. And I want to thank you so much for being on the show. It's a huge honor for me and getting to play your whole piece for the people. What a better way to celebrate Halloween. Thank you so much, John Elderkin.
Listen, I can't thank you enough. This is like such a privilege, and the idea that the whole record got played, like I will always remember this. Well, so thank you.
It's one song to me, just different parts.
Yeah, yeah.
And man,
you're on it.
If you any music coming future, bring my way, please. And I'd love to hear news about further developments on this piece.
Great, I promise I will.
Okay, thank you, John. It's been October 31, 2018, edition of Watt for Peter Show. Special guest, John Elderkin. Happy Halloween, people. Keep your powder dry.